Welcome in to You're the Cure right here on AM 580. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, with Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. You can go there, check out past archived programs and all kinds of other good stuff. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Wade.
How are you?
Good. Good to have you back.
Well, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Did you have a good time?
I did.
Good.
I did. I'm glad to be back, though, but missed your show a couple of times. I know you have always good programs, so I'll have to check those out. But today, what are we going to talk about?
Well, it's first Monday of August, so that's the Morley Robbins show today.
The Morley Robbins. Marty Robbins.
we could get him to sing, maybe.
Right. You know, you're going to bring your ratings down to zero once I do.
Yeah, well, you definitely don't want to hear me sing.
Or me either.
I was in choir practice as a youngster at church one time, and the choir teacher asked me to stay after to practice. And boy, my brothers and sister made fun of me. And I think if they could have, they would have kicked me out of church choir, but I don't think that was allowed. I do not carry a tune.
Take all comers, right?
That's right. Well, Morley, thank you for joining us. We're excited to hear what you've learned over the past month. I've been thinking about, because, of course, Morley and I correspond in between these first Mondays. And so I was thinking about something. Unintended consequences is a term we use often in my world on this show at our clinic. I was on vacation this summer. The Grand Canyon is one of our stops on our RV trip with the family. And we watched the little movie that they play in the visitor center before we went out and looked at the canyon. And in that video, they talked about fire suppression and, man-made fire suppression techniques. Get in there and put out these big fires or little fires. Every time you see a fire, let's put it out. And the point of the video was they showed this these tree rings from a tree that they had cut. And I forget what type. It was some sort of pine tree, but this particular type of pine tree grew a thick bark that actually protects it from small fires. So these little fires that come through and clean up all the underbrush, and it burns these more mature trees a little bit, but they keep growing. And so they showed the tree rings from the 1800s and on. You could just follow it through time, and these tiny little burn marks on the tree rings back in the 1800s, late 1800s, early 1900s, and then it marked a spot on the tree ring where man had stepped in with this new fire suppression technique, basically putting out every fire that came along. And it showed this gap of no fires for a number of tree rings, and then all of a sudden a huge, huge fire mark on the tree ring. And it was a very distinct difference. And the point that the park ranger was making on the video was the way things happened naturally before man intervened were these small fires. We were down in that under all the brush burned up and the forests weren't so thick. And it just worked. It prevented the big forest fires from coming. Once man stepped in, though, with his fire suppression techniques, it caused too much overgrowth of the forest and a lot of dead timber and a lot of brush underneath the trees, and it would be this perfect storm for this huge, massive fire to come, once every 10 years. So they were trying to get back to nature, back to the way the original intent was with these small little fires that come through every year or two. It's just really interesting. Another, to me, what rang out was, man, unintended consequences. Man gets in there with fire suppression techniques, and our intent was good. We started off with the right intent, but without a deeper and fuller understanding of how God's original intent and design was, we screw things up. and I've gone on in my mind to list 7 or 8 other things. I'm going to be giving a presentation in November in Dallas at the Weston A. Price Foundation, and I think I'm going to lead off with unintended consequences, the man-made actions that may be good intentioned at first, but without a deeper and more mature understanding of how things really operate, we mess things up. So that brings us right into iron fortification of our foods. And I want to just review last month's show. If you didn't listen to it, I'd encourage you to go to our archives and listen, because that was a big part of the show. We talked about this iron fortification of our food, and we just didn't understand back then that the body only needs 25 milligrams of iron in a day in 24 hours, and 24 of that 25 milligrams comes from the iron recycling system of the body. So we only need 1 milligram dietarily, which is pretty easy to get with natural foods, both meat and plants. But iron fortified foods like Cheerios, and mostly it's the grains, but supplements and medications too, you can't forget about. But I think we talked about a bowl of Cheerios, there was eight grams of iron, or milligrams of iron, in just a one cup of Cheerios, much less two or three cups.
Half cup.
And then if you add toast, you add all, you know, then you have lunch and you have some spaghetti or you have a burrito or whatever. Just a standard American diet. It's full of grains fortified with iron. We're getting 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 milligrams of dietary iron in a day when we only need 1 milligram dietarily. The other 24 come from recycling. And so how I apply this in my thinking is the original intent was, knowing we'd only absorb about a milligram from diet a day, and we do need the capacity to store some iron, because if we got in a fight with a wild animal or another human, I guess, and we bled, we need to be able to pretty quickly grab some of that stored iron to replace our blood, because there's no blood transfusion in hospitals, you know, hundreds of and thousands of years ago. So we need that capacity to store some amount of iron and then to be able to utilize it as needed. But we were never intended to be exposed dietarily to this horrendous amount of iron. And we learned in the show last time that this dietary iron goes directly into the cell, directly into the mitochondria, and just wreaks havoc on the mitochondria, turning the mitochondria into a very, very inefficient carburetor, blowing out tons of exhaust and very little energy. And when the energy of the cell drops, we talked about, that's when all these bugs come alive. So the chronic Epstein-Barr EBV or Lyme or Candida or whatever bug you're dealing with will just wake up and go to town in this low energy cell. So this excess dietary iron is a big problem. We also discussed how copper, bioavailable copper, if you have enough of this bioavailable copper, you can kind of handle this iron. You for sure can handle normal amounts of iron, but even a little excessive iron, if you had enough bioavailable copper, I propose that we could probably even handle some excess iron. Not a huge amount, but the problem is none of us have this bioavailable copper. We've killed our bioavailable copper, mostly through modern dietary and supplemental techniques and fortification techniques, including ascorbic acid, supplemental synthetic vitamin D, and just stress and inflammation. All of this kills our bioavailable copper, and you've got to have bioavailable copper to do the recycling. 24 of the 25 milligrams comes from the recycling system. Recycling systems run off bioavailable copper. So it's this perfect storm, unintended consequence. We thought we needed more iron. It turns out we didn't. We need to improve our recycling. This is done with bioavailable copper, not and something we just don't have in modern society, modern food, modern lifestyles. Totally, totally diminishes our bioavailable copper. So that's a little summary and a little tidbit on unintended consequences. Morley, if you have anything to add to that intro, and then I'll talk about some other thoughts. A couple of colleagues made some comments this past week to me that I wanted to share with you. But first, let you get a word in, if you'd like, on that opening barrage.
Sure. I think one of the most important topics that we've discussed that you keep referencing, and I think it's an important clarion bell for people to understand, that at the end of the Second World War, the United States was considered, if not the healthiest, one of the healthiest nations on the planet, was at the top of any kind of World Health Organization chart. And now, some 70 years later, we're we're competing with some pretty interesting countries for the bottom of the heap.
Yeah.
So that in
like Croatia,
so
seven, I'm pretty sure yeah. Croatia is ahead of us now.
Yeah.
Not that I have anything against Croatia.
Let's all sing the national anthem of Croatia. but I think that's a striking change in our world status. Mm-hmm. And most people, by virtue of the amount of money that's spent in this country, would be surprised to learn that there has been that complete depletion of our standing in the world. And I've sat back to try to understand what changed? What were those unintended consequences? And here are five that I think reinforce what you're talking about that really have moved the spotlight away from Mother Nature and more towards some narrative, because there's a big difference between nature and narrative. And so the narrative that's emerged over the last 70 years is to look at a protein like ferritin as an indication of iron status, when in fact we now know that it's empty shotgun shells. And that what was used 70 years ago was hemoglobin, because that's where upwards of 70% of the iron was stored and used in hemoglobin. And less than 10% of the iron is used in ferritin. So we've lost this true north about how do we measure iron status. Second, we are encouraged to focus on an iron regulatory protein or hormone, excuse me, called hepcidin, which has 25 amino acids, and it's a negative regulator of iron status. And we're not at all informed about ferrooxidase. And that what I was sharing with Dr. Ben over the weekend was a very important article that revealed that there's a very hotly debated issue about, does ferrooxidase enzyme really do what they've been showing it's been doing since 1948? So for 60 years, that's actually 70 years. For 70 years, that's the very mechanism that regulates iron. And there's scientists and clinicians are still challenging that. We are told to focus on vitamin D, that's the be-all and end-all of our biology, when in fact the body runs on AND, and that retinol is instrumental and essential for proper iron regulation. But all the spotlights are on vitamin D. We are told to focus on hypoxia, to create this sense that we don't have enough oxygen, that we're all living at, you know, suddenly we're all living in Albuquerque at 7,000 feet, air's thin, and we don't have the oxygen, when in fact what hypoxia really is that the oxygen that should have been used for energy production is being diverted into reactive oxygen species because there's not enough bioavailable copper to activate the oxygen or stop the oxidants. So again, we don't know what the hydrogen peroxide level is in our body. It can be measured in both blood and urine, but that's not even a marker that's routinely on a blood test. And then the granddaddy of them all of the spotlights are on iron. That's the number one nutrient deficiency on the planet, which is intriguing, given that iron is the number one element on the planet. What that tells us is that the most evolved species, let's accept that we are the evolved species on the planet, that we have higher consciousness, that would assume we would have higher physiological function, and yet we can't even metabolize the number one element, but yet there's nothing that talks about copper. Nothing talks about the bioavailability of copper. And so though there are five key markers now where the message is, look here, but don't look over there with those other five markers. And I would contend that those are five good reasons why we went from top of the world to competing with Croatia, because there's a complete mismanagement and misunderstanding about how iron is regulated and kept in balance in Homo sapiens. So that's my addition to your opening volley.
Okay, that's great. So I just want to remind everybody, especially if you're a new listener, the mitochondria is just trying to, make some energy, ATP, magnesium ATP. And I'm really fascinated with Dr. Tom Cowan. Morley, I know you're familiar with Dr. Cowan and his books. Mm-hmm. I got an advanced copy of his latest book. I think it's coming out in September. Hopefully I can interview him then. But it's about cancer and the new biology of water is the name of the book. And he goes on to continue his explanation / theory on the structuring of the water inside the cell, how the water in your cell is really H3O2, a fourth phase of water that Dr. Jerry Pollack discovered at University of Washington 20 years ago. Dr. Cowan discusses Dr. Gilbert Ling's research that shows the ATP sodium-potassium pumps on the cell membrane. That's to pump sodium out of your cell, keep the potassium inside the cell so that the cell membrane can be charged, have a gradient there so it'll be charged like a battery. So this pump that pumps sodium out and potassium in runs off ATP. But Ling showed in his research that there's just not enough energy. There's not enough ATP to really truly do that work on the cell membrane. And the theory Dr. Cowan proposes, it's actually the structuring of the water of the cell. And he describes it kind of like a mosquito net or the screen on your window. The actual structure of the water molecules inside your cell act like this kind of screen that where sodium can filter out, but potassium can't. So it's like you let in the little gnats, but you keep the flies out because the holes in the screen are just the right size for that. And there's a lot of science behind that, but that's a basic layman's understanding of it, is this structuring of the water inside your cell is what really gives the cell energy and allows this gradient on the cell membrane to happen. Now, the pumps are there, and that sodium-potassium pump's there, but it's kind of like a backup mechanism, backup generator kind of thing. And his point is the structuring of that water, just like you're making Jell-O at home, you can take regular water, you put the gelatin in a bowl, and it just sits there. You've got this powder at the bottom of a bowl of water. Nothing happens. You've got to add an energy source, heat. And when you add that energy source of heat to that mixture, then the gelatin proteins start to change and interact with the water molecules in such a way it changes all these, the structure of the water, and you get Jell-O. Same thing inside the cell. Dr. Cowan's explained this mitochondria is making the energy. That is the heat. That is the energy, the ATP that it's making, the energy to keep that water structured, to keep that gel-like state and give the cell energy. So anything that disrupts that mitochondria's ability to make energy is going to affect the ability of the cell to make the structuring of the water, which is going to affect the entire operation of the cell. They showed a study, a cancerous cell, they took the nucleus out, all the DNA, the nuclear material, out of the cancer cell and transplanted it into a healthy cell, meaning the water of the cell was healthy. It was structured properly. And all the oncogenes, all the DNA, all the genetics of cancer turned off. That nucleus turned back to normal from a cancer nucleus with oncogenes turned on to a normally functioning nucleus with oncogenes turned off, just based off the intracellular water. And the point I'm getting at is this all feeds back to the mitochondria making energy to be able to keep that water structure, to keep all the operations of the cell working properly. And, of course, we can't forget clearing the exhaust, the reactive oxygen species Morley mentioned earlier, some of this exhaust free radicals that come out of making energy in your carburetor. You've got to be able to clear those and neutralize those. And you do that with antioxidant enzymes that run off copper. Well, excess dietary iron and not enough bioavailable copper disrupts this entire process where you can't make the energy, you can't clear the exhaust. And that brings me to the point that I wanted to talk about today, Morley, and get your comments on. there's some products available on the market called redox signaling molecules. There's some doctors that have been, I've listened to, that have been saying, hey, the free radical theory of aging is shot. It doesn't make sense. These antioxidants that we thought would save the world, that's not the answer. We actually need these free radicals. So some of this exhaust that's coming out of the mitochondria when you make energy, we actually need it. We can't just load everybody up with antioxidants. So do these, what they call redox signaling molecule supplements, which there is some truth to that. So here's my thought, and then I'll kick it to Morley for his thoughts. We do need some amount of free radical production. That's actually beneficial for us. We need the ability to make some inflammation in the cell. We need to be able to kill some germs. We need to be able to make some heat. We need to be able to create some fire. But then we got to come in and control that fire. That's the antioxidant enzymes. They've got to come in and be able to keep that fire under control, put the free radicals out after they've done their little job. There's some communication that goes on with these free radicals. Some of this exhaust is actually beneficial, helps keep the cell communicating well. But then we've got to deal with them. We can't let it get out of control. And it's the out-of-control free radical production, this excessive amount of fire that gets made because you can't put the fire out. That's where you step it up a notch into this huge oxidative storm and oxidative stress and inflammation that's actually damaging. So it's almost like there's a spectrum. In fact, Morley sent me a slide of this spectrum of oxidative stress. And part of that spectrum, when you get too far over, is this rip-roaring inflammation that's associated.